Why is the shopping cart always in the top right of the screen?
How do companies predict my purchases?
Why do prices end in 9?
Why do fast food companies use red and yellow in their logos?
Why do restaurants always have one expensive menu item?
Researchers, marketers, and very curious people seek the answers for how we make decisions and how we choose products. ClickSuasion finds the secrets that companies use and shares them with you.
Why do I feel better when I bought the last remaining airline ticket?
How do I make choices based on colors and fonts?
Welcome to ClickSuasion. This is Michael Barbera. Today's guest is Jeffrey Moore. Jeffrey Moore is an author, speaker, advisor who splits his consultant time between startup companies in the Moore David Dow portfolio and established high-tech enterprises, most recently including Salesforce, Microsoft, Intel, Box, Aruba, Cognizant, and Rackspace. Jeffrey Moore's life has focused on the market dynamics surrounding disruptive innovations. His first book, Crossing the Chasm, focuses on challenges startup companies face when transitioning from early adopting to mainstream consumers. It has sold more than 1 million copies, and his third edition has been revised such that the majority of its examples and case studies reference companies that have come into prominence from the last decade. Moore's most recent work, Escape Velocity, addresses the challenge large enterprises face when they seek to add a new line of business to their established portfolio. Jeffrey, welcome to ClickSuasion.
Well, thank you for having me, Michael. I appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. So I want to ask you, this is typically a not-so-popular first question, but we hear you speak, you're often at conferences, you're all over YouTube, your book is popular. What's your motivation to share the technology adaption lifecycle?
Well, so I guess the ultimate motivation is I think technology has a big role to play in making the world a better place. It might potentially make it a darker place, but I think there's lots of potential to make it a better place. But to do that, technology companies have to be successful with their businesses so that they can thrive and grow and reinvest and create jobs and also create value. And the challenges that you have as a tech company developing markets, particularly early markets, causes a lot of companies to lose their way in highly valuable technologies not to get to market or not to get to market at scale. And that, to me, is a bad outcome. So my life's work is about hoping to get a much better yield on all this wonderful technology.
In Crossing the Chasm, you mentioned, you talk in detail about the technology adoption lifecycle. Can you elaborate? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, because that's kind of it's a framework that Everett Rogers originally came up with. He called it diffusion of innovation. His work was way back in the 1950s. But the idea behind it is, when you introduce a disruptive technology into any community, whether it's a marketplace or a country or an organization, different people will respond to the technology and adopt it at different points in its history. So there are early adopters, there's the early majority, there's late majority, and each of these different constituencies has a very different set of values that cause them to come to adopt at the time that they do. And one of the challenges if you're marketing high technology is you have to get a sense of where are you in the technology adoption lifecycle, and then what values should you be appealing to at that point, and what is the profile of the customer who's the next customer base to bring on in your journey through the technology adoption lifecycle. And that's what the book Crossing the Chasm, and there was a follow-on book called Inside the Tornado, that's exactly what that's about.
How would you define an early adopter?
Well, so there are two classes of early adopters. We called them the technology enthusiasts and the visionaries. The technology enthusiasts were people who were just generally interested in whatever the technology is in itself. If it's blockchain, they're interested in blockchain. If it's machine learning, they're interested in machine learning. And they're in the customer base. They're very excited by the new products. They tend to respond to emails. They'll go to websites. They'll go to webinars. They want to learn. They typically don't have very much funding. So most corporations use them as a sort of an early sensor to say, is this something we should pay attention to or not? So when you market to the technology enthusiasts, you're really just trying to get credibility with your technology so that you can get to the second early adopting constituency, which we call the visionaries. And the visionaries are executives who have significant budgets and who are looking for opportunities to take new technology and use it to change the game in their industry. So a Jeff Bezos is an obvious visionary, Steve Jobs, all the tech visionaries. But a Reed Hastings at Netflix is a visionary. People in Elon Musk and Tesla is a visionary. These are people who want to use technologies, who will make the big bets and go first. And those, so they are essentially the people that fund and drive what we call the early market, which is the market before the chasm.
And for the listeners, what exactly is the chasm?
So the chasm is that period where the visionaries have gotten all excited. They've actually had success in what we call the early market. You have some big marquee clients. You know, everybody's getting very excited, very optimistic. And then all of a sudden, the market goes really quiet, and your sales cycles get longer and longer, and you find out that you hired a bunch of salespeople, they cannot sell, they cannot have success selling, and you think, well, what's going wrong? And what's going wrong is that the next constituency in the cycle, after the technology enthusiasts and after the visionaries, we call the pragmatists. And the pragmatists essentially say, look, this is very exciting technology, but it's not yet proven in the marketplace. And so I'd like to wait until I see other people using it. And when I see other people using it, I will want to use it too. In the meantime, I'd still love to learn to it. So they invite you back to give demos. They invite you back to give presentations. They might even do a tiny pilot project, but they're not yet ready to buy. And so this chasm period is a period where you have a terrible lull in sales. And if you thought you were going to be growing fast during this period and you hired a bunch of salespeople, you can often lose your entire company.
Now, the technology adoption lifecycle flows pretty well. How can an organization identify if they've either skipped a segment or a phase of the lifecycle, or they're stuck in a specific, or stuck in the chasm?
That's good. Yeah, I think the biggest problem is stuck in the chasm, because what's so strange about the pragmatists who will get you out of the chasm, who will be, the pragmatists are really the mainstream market, and they're the people that do all the big spending. Now, as I said, most of them won't want to wait until they see others doing it. So we sometimes call it the junior high dance problem, where, you know, how do you get people to start the dance? But it turns out that there's a small group of pragmatists in any market who have problems that are very severe. They're not being met by the traditional solutions. And if you can tie your new technology, your disruptive technology, to that, to the solution to one of those problems, then they will buy with you, with it, provided you make the commitment to solve their problem 100%. And that usually requires you to bring in other companies to complete the solution. You rarely would have all of the solution yourself, but you make that commitment. And so the hardest thing for these visionary, these technology startups is they've had such success with visionaries. The visionaries love their product. They see the vision. They're very optimistic about what you could do with it. And the pragmatists don't love your product, don't have a vision. They're just stuck with a problem. And they're really, they're pessimistic, not optimistic. And they need you to come in and own that problem with them. And you're thinking, well, gosh, my technology solves lots of problems. But at this point in the life cycle, it's very important that you solve one problem end to end and get a foothold in the mainstream market with a bunch of customers that are totally loyal to you. Because if you really do solve this problem, they will stay loyal to you and they will be a very good group of customers. And then you can expand out from there.
What's your opinion on organizational human capital being vital to getting past the chasm?
Well, I think what happens is the kinds of leadership you look for change. So, and we actually have four stages in the model. So there's the early market, then there's crossing the chasm, then there's what we call inside the tornado. That's when everybody wants your product all at once. And then there's what we call Main Street, which is when your product has just become part of the general infrastructure of life. And if you look at your human capital in your company, different people lead in each of those four stages. So one of the challenges of management is to be able to transfer the leadership baton to the right kind of people as you go through the life cycle. So in the early market, it's typically the very charismatic salespeople, it's often your own CEO, who can create a vision and get people to buy into it, and a really strong technologist who really can explain to the technology enthusiasts exactly how all this stuff works. But when you cross the chasm and you're going after these pragmatists in pain, we sometimes call them, have these severe problems, now the critical capability is to have a domain expert in the problem, somebody ideally who's been hired out of your target customer segment's industry, who really understands the problem and create that bridge between a technology solution, which is very unfamiliar, and a problem which is very compelling. And so you let that person dictate your roadmap. You also let them build the presentation for the sales thing. You also let them help you orchestrate the partners that you need to complete the solution. It's a very, very focused effort, and they run it. Then when you get into the tornado, when all of a sudden everybody says, no, this is cloud computing, this is mobile computing, everybody has to have it. Now what you want to have is a market share capture strategy, which means you need great salespeople and product people that deliver on time, features on budget, on time, on spec. And it's a big execution machine, because the last thing you want to have happen in a tornado is to have your product not be in the market or your sales team not competitive. That's a very competitive time, and you want your most competitive people running the company when you're inside the tornado. And then finally, on Main Street, Main Street is all about customer success. It's all about a long-term relationship with the customer, supporting the customer. And now you want people who can genuinely be patient, not try to catch every sale all the time, but think about the customer side of the table. Really great support people, really great, we sometimes call them farmers as salespeople, and engineers who are willing to add the next feature, but only if it's going to be valuable to the customer. So very different people at very different times in the life cycle.
Jeffrey, what is this tornado you speak of?
Well, the tornado, so the pragmatists who make this buying decision, remember, the way they make their decision is, I will do it when I see somebody else doing it. So that creates the chasm, because they don't see anybody else doing it. But it also creates the tornado, which is, oh my gosh, everybody's doing it. I'm going to be left behind. I have to do it too. And so all of a sudden you go from having nobody, you're struggling to get your pipeline full, to your pipeline is just stuffed. And now the problem is, how fast can you process the pipeline? Because now, well, for example, cloud computing is a great example right now. Everybody wants to be in the cloud now. And so Amazon went from trying to evangelize cloud computing to they just can't. I mean, they have to get as efficient as they can, because everybody wants to do it. And Azure from Microsoft, the same thing. So that would be a good example of a tornado right now.
We're talking on cloud computing right now.
We are. And we're talking with mobile devices. I mean, this is pretty much, if you think about the things that are going on right now, cloud and mobile are the most active ones. The one that's coming next, I think, is going to be around machine learning and big data, and then potentially Internet of Things or blockchain. I mean, there's a bunch of these technologies that are in various stages of the life cycle. And so the key, and I spend time, as you mentioned, with a venture firm. The current firm is called Wildcat. It was born partially out of the prior Moore Davidow partnership, but it's all venture's all about trying to get the next one in line, but then to early market, cross the chasm, and then usually when you get inside the tornado, they go public and they're off to the races.
So even when we cross the chasm, brands, we're still going to encounter skeptics. What are some challenges of approaching skeptics, and how can we convince or persuade them to use our product or service?
It's a great question. So I think in the early market, before the chasm, you actually engage with them directly and they talk with you directly. But pragmatic people tend to value their peers more than you. So in other words, if you ever look at a word of mouth survey in marketing, if you ever say to Mark, what is the biggest influence on a buying decision? Word of mouth is almost always number one. And that just reflects the fact that pragmatists, they'll listen to your pitch. They're very polite. They'll ask you questions. But then when you leave the room, they want to talk to other people, to your other customers. They want to talk to your competitors. They want to talk to industry analysts. These are more B2B. If it's a consumer, they'll talk to their friends, or they'll go onto Facebook, or they'll go check these things out. They'll go onto Yelp or whatever, wherever they're getting information. And they really trust that. So at that point, it's very important that your marketing shift from talking about yourself, which is more like advertising, to getting other people to talk about you, which is more like PR. And now in the new digital age, there's a lot of work with communities and creating these collections of people to talk about you. And then very conservative people who really, frankly, don't like technology at all, they rely almost entirely on a trusted advisor who might be their nephew or their grandson or, the person that sits next to them in the office. And they just do whatever that person tells them to do. So your marketing then has to be very credible with the knowledgeable people in the industry. By that time, the industry has weeded out the winners from the losers, and you just have to be a winner.
So speaking of winning, in your book you mentioned when talking about fighting into the mainstream, you say, quote, "Nobody wants your presence. You are an invader," unquote. Could you elaborate?
Sure. When you look at the way markets self-organize, they self-organize around clusters of companies. And sometimes the companies are collaborating, but even if it's a cluster of competitors, you'll see, like, for example, we just talked about cloud computing, and I mentioned very quickly Amazon and Microsoft, Azure and AWS. Now, there are other cloud computing businesses. Oracle has a big cloud computing business. IBM has a big cloud computing business. But the truth is there's only a handful of real players in the market. And then after that, the market kind of goes, I don't think we need any more players. And then furthermore, if you have a traditional business and a disruptive technology is trying to come in, like right now the car companies are trying to figure out what to do with Tesla, it's like, oh my gosh, the car companies would love for Elon Musk to go do SpaceX and just stop this Tesla stuff because, you know, he's breaking up the entire model. Tesla has no dealerships. Tesla has no maintenance revenue to speak of. So all of a sudden, huge numbers of companies are going, this guy's going to put me out of business, you know, the way Borders got put out of business, you know. And so that's where they're not welcome.
Now, Tesla obviously targets a specific niche, and most companies should. What are your thoughts on how many niches are too many, and then at what point do you break away from target niche segments to really breaking into the mainstream?
Yeah, it's great. So I think a fire engine is just leaving in the background. Let me start again. If you look at when niche marketing is most important, it's during crossing the chasm itself. So in the early market, you're typically finding visionaries, and visionaries, you know, tend to be like one or two in an industry, not the bulk of the industry. So you kind of take your visionaries wherever they come from. But when you cross the chasm, you pick one market segment, a niche, and the idea behind that is to accelerate as fast as possible your ability to deliver a end-to-end solution to a really compelling problem that pragmatic people in that industry have. So that's niche marketing at its most intense, because what you're trying to do is to get out of the chasm, find a beachhead market that will support you, and then you can grow from there. Now, after that, there's often a transition before the tornado where you go into adjacent markets. They're still niche markets, but maybe they're niche markets that can partially use the solution you built for the first niche market, or maybe they do business with that niche, and so they hear about your company. One way or another, it's a little easier to go after those niches because you're pre-set up to go after them. But then when you get inside the tornado, you go much more horizontal. Now it's just capture as many customers as you can from wherever you can with a very standard product, because this is the time when everybody says, I have to have this. I have to have a mobile device in my office, email communications capability. I just have to have one, whether it's Android or iOS or whatever. I got to have one now. So whoever sells me one now, they become my vendor probably for a long time to come. So you really want to capture market share. So that's not niche at all. And then on Main Street, you know, the niches kind of sometimes reemerge, but they're very light. They're the kind of thing where you say, well, this person, you know, wants to buy an SUV and this person wants a minivan, but they're both parents with kids and soccer moms or whatever it is. And so you have minor variations on the offering, but that's not at all like the niche marketing when you were crossing the chasm.
I'm glad you mentioned beachhead, and I'm going to take the bait on this because you have a really good D-Day analogy that I believe the majority of individuals who are not familiar with the adoption lifecycle could benefit from. Could you tell us this analogy?
Sure. So what happened, you know, if you think about when the Allies were trying to deal with the Nazi occupation of Europe back in 1944, they needed to get out of England and get back onto the continent. And, you know, they were fighting in, there was North Africa, there was Italy, there was France, all these places you could go. But what they ended up doing, of course, is going to one very, very, very specific part on the coast of Normandy and the coast of France, because they needed to get an established force on the other side of the English Channel at scale. So that's the crossing the chasm analogy. When you're an early adopter, when you're an entrepreneur, you see all kinds of markets for your technology. And that's part of what motivates you, is to see all these wonderful things. But when you cross the chasm, you got to cross in one place. And one of my favorite examples of this, although it goes back a while, but when Steve Jobs led the development of the Macintosh at Apple way back in 1984, 85, he was building a computer for the rest of us, kind of what the iPhone and the Mac and everything have become today. But back then, it was not that at all. The IBM PC was by far the standard. So what happened was Apple actually went after a market called desktop publishing, and it was selling to corporate marketing and graphics groups for management presentations and newsletters and whatnot. And you know, and it was an incredibly successful strategy because the Mac was just perfect for that. The PC was useless. And then they had to have a laser printer, so they had to get some printers from PostScript from Adobe, and they had to have software from a company called Aldus PageMaker, and they pulled it all together. But the irony of the whole thing is the only person who hated that program was Steve Jobs, because he said, I didn't build a computer for graphic artists and corporations. I built a computer for every man. And so the challenge that a leadership has when it's time to cross the chasm is to be willing for the visionary to be willing to put up with the fact that in the transition, there's this niche market beachhead idea that you want to capture. And then that's a pathway to, you know, liberating all of Europe, or in the case of Apple, liberating the whole human race, as far as I could tell with iPhone and whatnot.
No, that's not true at all.
It is a kind of, you know, what is amazing is, you know, 2007 was the iPhone, and you just think, oh my goodness, how the world has changed by that one device,
and only 10 years.
Exactly. It was just astounding.
What are some other products or services that you believe successfully crossed the chasm?
Well, I mean, so it depends on your generation. You know, if you think about, if we just go back, let's say, to the beginning of this century. So first of all, we had the World Wide Web, and so it was Netscape, and it was Yahoo, and it was eBay and whatnot. And then I think the really remarkable one, and we had search engines, but then Google search came out of nowhere. And Google wasn't that disruptive. So it's interesting as to whether it had to cross the chasm or it actually started kind of almost inside the tornado at birth. But Google kind of changed the entire world. And then Facebook, you know, came. And Facebook's an interesting crossing the chasm story from the point of view that it started just at Harvard. And then its first scaling was actually Ivy League colleges. And so now it was a kind of a thing that you would use at college. And then what happened was the high school friends of the new college students wanted to stay in touch. So the college students got the high school kids onto Facebook. So that then created a youth thing, and then somebody figured out then they put pictures on Facebook. So now we're getting inside the tornado. We're well inside the tornado, and then grandparents want to see pictures of grandchildren, and so all of a sudden this thing goes from a college, you know, tool for freshman orientation to 2 billion people in the world, or 1.5 billion people. I can't remember how many it is right now. I think it's 2 billion are on Facebook. So it's a classic example of going from the early market to a massive tornado.
Why do you believe that sales metrics are fatal early in the life cycle?
Well, so sales metrics are performance metrics. Basically, the way you compensate a salespeople is the more you sell, the more you make, right? So if you're a salesperson, you try to find things that are relatively easy to sell so you can do a lot of sales and go to President's Club and make a lot of commissions. That's what you're supposed to do. In the early part in the life cycle, things are incredibly hard to sell. You don't get to sell that many of them. And it's very, very hard to meet a quota based on working with early market products or crossing the chasm products. So at that point, you've got to revamp your sales compensation and or hire a different kind of sales force, a more evangelical sales force or a more solution-oriented sales force. But I think you also should change the compensation program, because until you get to the tornado, you're really not trying to maximize revenue overall. You're actually trying to capture key market segments, first the visionaries and then the pragmatists in pain. And standard sales compensation is actually designed for the tornado or maybe for Main Street, but it's not designed for those first two phases.
So, Jeffrey, as tech moves forward into, say, machine learning, Internet of Things, AI, what do you feel is next? What do you believe is next for the life cycle?
Well, I think what's happening that's so interesting is that most of my life, tech was a separate sector. So there was a technology sector, and then you had, you know, automotive, and you had healthcare, and you had retail, and you had all media and all these things. What we're seeing in the last 10 years in particular, say 15 years, is that technology now has infused all the sectors. So now all of a sudden, the technology adoption lifecycle, which used to be something that if you were in high tech, you would specialize in, but if you were in automotive, you didn't worry about it. Well, now you do worry about it. When are you going to introduce your first electric car? General Motors, BMW, Mercedes, Ford, et cetera. You know, if you are in media, when are you going to have, you know, an all digital capability, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, you know, whatever. So if you're in movies and whatever, how are you going to deal with Netflix? And if you're in retail, how are you going to deal with Amazon? And so all of a sudden, retailers who you used to think of as kind of the least technical people have to get incredibly technical or they're going to lose their businesses. And so I think the big difference now is for me is that technology is infusing everything, which means the technology adoption lifecycle, instead of just being the problem of the CIO or the IT buyer inside a company, it's now the problem of the CEO and the board of directors. And so it's getting a much, much broader exposure.
So what would you say to a company that obviously does business on the internet, but doesn't claim themselves to be a tech company?
Well, I think the thing is, you know, look, if you're an existing company, you have customers that value doing business with you. That's how you got to where you are. Those customers don't need you to become a visionary. They don't need you to become a Steve Jobs or a Jeff Bezos or a Reed Hastings. What they need you to do is to keep up with the technology as it goes along. You don't have to be first. You don't even have to be best. You just have to be good enough that they say, you know, because we have an established relationship, because I trust you, because you're a brand I know, or because you've given me service in the past, I want to continue doing business with you. And if you, as long as you can absorb enough of the new technology that I don't feel like I'm going back in time, I will continue to do business with you. One of my favorite examples of this is cab companies are now adopting the Uber technology. Now they're not Uber. They still have cabs and they still have employees and they still have medallions that they get from cities. But you can now call many cab companies on a mobile phone. You download their app. You can call, summon them to come and get you. You can see them come to you. You can pay them with your mobile. So that's what I mean by keeping up. And that's, I think, the key responsibility of a company that's not a tech company, but has got tech responsibilities if they're going to stay relevant.
So should we expect the book title Keeping Up from you in the future?
Yeah, exactly. I have a blog on LinkedIn and basically it's all about that, right? Because every sector of the economy is now going, government, education, healthcare. I mean, there's all kinds of things that can be happening there, but they're all going to have to go digital and they're probably brought to it kicking and screaming.
Jeff, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. How could listeners find your book and also find you?
Well, okay. So I think the books, the easiest way to get books, surprise, surprise, is on Amazon. So Crossing the Chasm, and they can get it in all the formats that Amazon presents. There's other books. The latest book is called, you mentioned Escape Velocity, and there's been a follow-on book that goes very tightly with that book called Zone to Win. Again, all of that on Amazon. I actually would love, if you're on LinkedIn, I do blog on LinkedIn. I try to use that as my way of staying in touch with folks at scale. And then email gmoore, G-M-O-O-R-E, at jeffreyamoore.com. So that's G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y-A-M-O-O-R-E.com. Happy to get to, an email.
Jeffrey, again, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for being a guest on ClickSuasion.
Well, thank you, Michael.
For the listeners, go ahead and subscribe to ClickSuasion wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll let you know when the next episode is available.
Thanks for listening to ClickSuasion. Subscribe to the podcast, read our research, and get in touch with us at ClickSuasion.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @ClickSuasion.